the one who gives the invitation, "Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come." Glad for the presence of each one. Welcome here. I was, again, really impressed the last 2 days, attending some of the sessions anyway, of CASB, Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute, CASB. And there's a board, a committee that has done this now for 10 years, and it's really encouraging to see the burden and the inspiration that of a lot of men have for the Christian school. And I was really blessed that our whole school board could be there. And thank you for the sacrifices. Some of you babysat and helped in other ways and made it possible. And I believe that that event in the years past has been a big improvement to a benefit to our school, and it will be again this year. Sometimes school is just one of those mundane things, but there's a greater vision, there's a huge impact, and let's be faithful in our part supporting the school, whatever that is. For a message this morning, our text is in Luke 12. You may turn there. As I was thinking on a number of things this week. One of the things I was thinking about is the change I've noticed in thinking in our society in just the last generation. If you go back 20 years or more, it was very common and very highly thought of to be a part of a secret society. Is that still in our decrees? I think there's something in there about that. Secret societies and clubs and granges and lodges and all kinds of groups that were exclusive, and only a certain group of people were welcome, and only if you met these criteria. And they're still around, but public opinion is changing. It's not as popular anymore. Especially elite and high society organizations that exclude those who don't quite measure up. I've noticed in the news in the last election, there were several candidates who had that thrown up and used against them, the fact that they were members of some elite group somewhere. And the accusation is that they're some of the upper crust and they're not part of the general society. And all around us, there's pressure to include and tolerate everyone. Everyone, regardless of their status, regardless of their choices, in spite of our differences, we need to just tolerate. We need to all just work together. Even if our core values are worlds apart, we dare not exclude anyone. There's a serious insurgency in favor of the underdog, and rising up to at least on the surface to represent the underprivileged, the minorities, and especially those who choose and practice disgusting and despicable actions and lifestyles that even nature itself tells us is just wrong. But don't you dare speak against it. Don't you dare disagree with it. Don't you dare exclude these folks from anything normal, no matter how abnormal they insist on being. In fact, we've got to change normal. That's what we need to do. Nothing may be abnormal anymore. Discrimination is about the worst crime you can commit today. It's worse than killing. It's worse than looting. It's worse than burning. It's worse than destruction. It's worse. Discrimination has got to be about the top of the list in public opinion, isn't it? They'd like us to think that anyway. And this pressure has made its way into Anabaptist circles. I heard a man speak recently. His church still carries the Mennonite name. And he said that even within his own church, it's wrong. It's becoming wrong to exclude people because they don't agree with our principles and our way of doing things. And so this pressure has made its way into Anabaptist circles. It's infiltrated conservative-minded groups. This change of thinking is affecting Mennonites. The demand of tolerance and acceptance for all is pushing in on our conference. Sure it is. The hesitancy to draw distinct lines that include some and exclude others, it's affecting your ministry here. I didn't ask Ron, but we're faced with that. We know about that. All of us. It's all around us. And some of you are young enough that you don't remember anything else. That's just the public opinion that you've grown up hearing in various ways. And so what should we do with this? Is the church as we have known it needing to change? Do we need to adapt? Do we need to change something? Should we have less distinct lines, less of inside and outside, less of they and us? Should we get rid of some of those terms? And do we need to be more ready to mingle and even join endeavors with others who are outside the church? Do we need to be less harsh and less judgmental with our beliefs and relating to people, especially those who are disobedient to the scriptures? Let's learn from Jesus. Luke chapter 12, verse 51. Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth? I tell you, nay, but rather division. That's what Jesus said. Is that? I'm here to cause divisions. In fact, I've titled the message, I am come to divide. I am come to divide. I think that's a fair paraphrasing of this verse, of what Jesus said here. I'm not come to give peace. Nay, no, I'm come to divide. Verse 52, for from henceforth there shall be five in one house divided, three against two and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son and the son against the father and the mother against the daughter and the daughter against the mother. The mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. If we didn't know the Bible very well, we could soon say, no, there's no way Jesus said that. That's not Jesus. And so the first point I have is Jesus, a divider, or the Prince of Peace. If you go back and look, these words that he was almost quoting verbatim come from the book of Micah, the prophecy of Micah. It was prophesied that this is father against father, and you can look it up from, it's in Micah. But then we also have the prophecy in the book of Isaiah, who the Messiah is coming, and he's going to be the Prince of Peace. And we love that, and we talk about that often. We don't sing Christmas songs about the great divider coming, do we? That doesn't fit our mentality of Jesus. And how do we reconcile this? I'll tell you my understanding. I'm open to discussion. But I believe that Jesus is not saying in Luke 12 that the purpose, the reason he came to earth, was to divide people and to divide families. But the very purpose that he did come for, to establish his kingdom, to bring truth and to be truth, he is truth, will inevitably cause division. By virtue of him being truth, truth requires decision. Truth requires a choice. And so some will choose one way and some the other. Are you okay with this? Are you okay with following Jesus in this way? This doesn't fit the woke agenda. This will put you at odds with society around you. Yes, it will, because the devil controls the thinking of the woke society. It puts you and I in direct opposition with the beliefs of many of our neighbors. And let's be careful that we aren't apologetic and that we're not intimidated by the division that our choice of Jesus will bring. It will bring divisions. Obviously, we're not talking about being obnoxious and rude and... No. But the simple truth and the choice of following Jesus will divide between you and many others around us. Let's look how this worked for Jesus. I have three passages I'd like to look at in the Gospel of John. Let's go to John chapter 7, first of all. All through this chapter of John chapter 7, there's a running account of Jesus speaking and people wrestling with it and trying to decide what to do with it, and it didn't make sense, and some of them chose differently. Let's start here and let's read verses 40 to 44. John 7, verse 40. Many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said, "Of a truth, this is the prophet." Others said, "This is the Christ." But some said, "Shall Christ come out of Galilee? Hath not the scripture said that Christ cometh of the seed of David and out of the town of Bethlehem where David was?" So there was a division among the people because of him. And some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. They were asking questions. What do we do with Jesus? How? Some said, this lines up. This must be the Messiah. They knew the scriptures. They knew the Old Testament. They knew these prophecies. And it made a division. Look back in verses 30 and 31. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him and said, "When Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done?" There was a back and forth. They were wrestling with it. And some chose one way and some chose another. Look in chapter 9, verse 16. We're not going to look a lot at the context here. Verse 16, the context is one that we know well. The man that was born blind, and Jesus healed him. And this brought it right to the Pharisees. They had to decide what to do with Jesus. They put the man out of the synagogue, and they had a system to protect here, and it wasn't working. Verse 16, therefore said some of the Pharisees, "This man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day." Others said, "How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles?" And there was a division among them. You see, Jesus said, "I came to divide." Jesus divides between those who believe and those who don't believe. Chapter 10, verse 19. There was a division, therefore, among the Jews for these sayings, and many of them said, "He hath a devil and is mad. Why hear ye him?" Others said, "These are not the words of him that hath a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind?" There was a division. They didn't know what... Jesus causes divisions. Truth always forces a choice. It requires a decision. And since the Jews back then and the Pharisees and everyone who came in contact with Jesus and everyone since, Americans today, we all are experiencing the freedom of choice. God has given us that freedom. And people respond differently to Jesus. People respond differently to truth. Some accept Jesus. Some reject truth. So, we claim to follow and to serve the one who has drawn very clear lines. Either you're in or you're out. That's how Jesus taught. Either you believe and obey, or you are an unbeliever and in opposition of Jesus. Next point I'd like to look at, and I've just given it a simple title, One Kingdom or the Other. One Kingdom or the Other. Jesus divides kingdoms. He made it very clear. My kingdom is not of this world. It's them and it's us. The two kingdoms have opposing agendas. They operate exactly opposite. Jesus' kingdom, the kingdom of his dear son, the Bible calls it, advances its cause through redemption and through love. The kingdoms of the world advance their agendas by force and by oppression. They advance by promoting me at the expense of you. And the one kingdom is controlled by the powers of darkness, controlled by the destroyer of men. And the other is drawn to their head in love and adoration because he gave his life for us. He has offered eternal life. One kingdom is commandeered by a ruthless tyrant, way worse than Putin. And the other is led by a tender shepherd, a most certain conqueror, and the king of all the earth. The other is in bondage to a ruler, a tyrant, who is facing certain doom and an end that words can't even describe. Do we have this clear? Do we understand that the two kingdoms are polar opposites? They're just as opposed to each other as Russia and Ukraine. And the conflict is raging and the battle is real. Or is it? Is it clear in your life? Is there a battle? How are we doing? Jesus divides. You're in one kingdom or the other. You are serving one or the other. And it gets very practical and it touches everyday life, for me anyway, frequently. Friday evening, I was driving south on 81 there by Hagerstown, Maryland. And going north was a long convoy of trucks and vehicles of various shapes and sizes. And one identifying factor of all of them was lots of American flags, all different shapes or ways of fastening them and flags. And there was no doubt who they were. And they were demonstrating their wishes to advance the best interests of their kingdom. How should we respond to those kind of demonstrations? Recently, in the last 5 years, let's say, or eight, the flag of United States, and more recently the flag of Canada, has taken on significance in support of right-leaning politics. Conservative political views, we call them. Those who support the conservative political beliefs are really using the display of the flag, their country's flag, to give a picture of their support of their views and to advance their agenda. And this gets close home to us because we tend to sympathize with right-leaning conservative views because they are certainly more in line with the principles we value than the far-flung left agenda. Because that's clearly evil. What's wrong with joining the groups on the bridges? Or standing along their route and cheering them on? Are we okay with that? Unfortunately, there have been groups of people who their neighbors knew better, but they didn't, obviously, who have been, there's pictures of them standing along the route and showing their support, and these are passed around quite a bit. And we need to know what we're going to do with this. We need to know where we stand. Or is it okay for me driving the other way on 81 to join in the horn blowing and wave at them and show them my solidarity with their, I'm with them on their agenda? It didn't tempt me. Probably wouldn't tempt most of us. But what about doing it in a more discreet way? How about I just join their fan page or whatever social media page and follow the latest developments and listen to all their speeches and watch all their videos and get wrapped right up in this thing? And then we start seeing posts and messages and public displays of their message on WhatsApp statuses of people who claim to be of the other kingdom, who claim to be on the opposing side. Let's be clear. It's one kingdom or the other. You know, in the past, the American flag was something that my parents' generation, for example, would have gone to great lengths to have nothing to do with. And I remember it too. In the past, it's been shown, it's a strong showing of patriotism, especially during time of war. And we don't want anything to do with war, and we're not going to fly a flag to show that we're, in 1991, for example, that we were really supporting the troops in the Gulf, in Iraq. But I'm concerned that as Trump and the conservatives have taken the flag and made it stand for something else, a good bit of it, they've made it the icon to champion right-leaning politics and conservative views. And like I said earlier, we can fairly easily get on board with this. Let's not lose the clear vision of one kingdom or the other. This gets practical. I'm not concerned that I'm going to meet any of you with a 4x8 flag flopping in the bed of your truck in a convoy. Probably not. I'm confident I'm not going to drive by anybody's house and see a flagpole going up with a American flag and a Trump 24 sign and whatever you want to put on. But are we keeping a very clear, distinct line, one kingdom or the other? Think of it with me this way. I'm sure there are no Ukrainians lining the route of the Russian convoy and hooting and giving them a fist pump and all whatever going on. No. There's a clear line. The division is clear. There's no Ukrainian giving any doubts to whether he supports that convoy. But do you think there's a possibility that there's a young Ukrainian man somewhere who's got his walking down the street and he's wearing his favorite cap? You know, it was a free one. It's his favorite one. And on the back of it's got a little embroidered Russian flag. You think so? I don't think so. Or how about a little flag sewn on his sleeve, a Russian flag, showing support for the enemy? I don't know how far to take this. The flag also means other things. We see flag stickers on merchandise to advertise that it's made in the USA. And I've seen some trailers that we've sold that had some, they've gotten pretty big. Am I okay to drive a trailer around with a 6x8 inch, 10 inch American flag on it? Or how far do you think a Ukrainian would do that today? You think if his trailer had a Russian flag on it, you think it would mean something to him? Or even if it was just a little button on a jacket? You see, I think when we get a clear vision of exactly what the lines are, these things mean something different to us. You see, for Mr. Ukrainian, we're talking about a life or death issue. His countrymen are very likely to take that as an offense that could cost him his life. Our conflict in the two kingdoms is just as sure and just as real as theirs over there. And let's not become lax. Let's not muddy the waters. Let's not turn gray what Jesus has made black and white. Each of us is in one kingdom or the other. It's not take it or leave it. It's not shrug it off. It's not halfway, maybe what, and not straddling the fence. There's no room for that. No more than there is for Ukraine and Russian armies to be half in, half out. The conflict, the lines are real. And Jesus meant what he said. Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth, I tell you nay, but rather division. If you have chosen Jesus' kingdom, your life will be radically different than the protesters and the demonstrators that are all around us. And let's make no apologies. Let's make no apologies for the lines that truth draws. Next point here, I don't have a lot on it, but Jesus said quite a bit on it. Maybe I should have made this my main point. And I just called this family or Jesus. If we turn back a couple of chapters to Luke chapter 14, Jesus picks this up and says it in a little different way. Luke 14, verse 26 and 27. If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. In both these passages, in Luke 12 and Luke 14, Jesus makes it very clear. Unless all other relationships are second place. Hate here, I understand that the word hate that he used here means to love less, second place. Unless all other relationships, including family, are second place, you can't be my disciple. Jesus didn't come to break apart families. Certainly not. That's Satan's program. And I came across a quote that helps me to understand these hard verses. And as I think about Jesus dividing, the wickedness of men and not the religion of the gospel is the cause of this hostility. It's the rejection. Often when people reject Jesus, they make it out to be the problem of the one who holds truth of why there needs to be a division. They're not responsible. But Jesus is not dividing just for the sake of dividing. Jesus is dividing because truth causes choice and forces us to choose. The next point, the title of the next point is the final dividing. Jesus talked often of dividing, of the final dividing. This makes it very serious because we're going to read some verses and it's so clear there won't be any doubt. There is no doubt that none of us wants to be on the wrong side of that divide because there's going to be a very clear divide. Turn with me. We're going to look at three passages in the book of Matthew. And I'm just going to read a number of verses in these three and not make a lot of comments. We'll let Jesus tell us about the final dividing. Let's start in Matthew chapter 7. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells of this. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 21. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Right words aren't enough, Jesus says. Although they may deceive the speaker, they do not override and cancel the judgment of one who is not obedient and who is not doing the will of the Father. And there's a very clear divide. Turn to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew 13, I'm just going to read. Jesus uses an analogy here, one that we can all understand. Let's start at verse 37. Matthew 13, 37. He answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. There's that word. There's that distinction. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of this world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear. There is a clear dividing, some to glory and some to eternal destruction. Turn to Matthew 25. I remember a few years back I was studying to preach a message on heaven. And I came across a very startling thought. I don't remember who it wasn't original with me, but someone analyzed Jesus' words and said, you'll notice that Jesus talks much more about judgment and coming destruction than he does about heaven. And here we are. Let's read it, and it's for a reason. Matthew chapter 25, let's read starting at verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another. Division, separation, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto me, done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. The final dividing, Which kingdom have you chosen? What is your life demonstrating? Where you are now determines where you'll be in the final dividing. The details of how you are relating to the country, to the kingdom of darkness, and how you are supporting the kingdom of his dear son directly impacts where you are in the final dividing. And this dividing is of much greater consequence, and probably the most sobering and horrible thing to think of is this dividing divides from the presence of Jesus forever. Or come unto me, come in. And so I echo the words of Moses to us. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you. I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life. We have a choice. We have choices every day that are a result of the big choice. Which kingdom? Who are we serving? We could stop there, but I'd like to end on a very positive note. You can turn with me to John again, to the book of John, chapter 3. And the last point I've titled, Whosoever Will. Let's recite John 3:16 together. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Whosoever will. Jesus isn't a ruthless divider like Satan. The invitation is for all. Look at verse 17. For God hath not sent his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. That's God's ultimate desire. And look what all he's done to accomplish that and to give everyone a choice. He has given his only begotten Son. So if you or anyone is on the wrong side of the division, of the truth, here's the invitation. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. Come ye. Oh, I forgot now. Come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Not just certain groups. Not just certain elite. Not just a few upper level. Not some special race. Nothing to do with financial status. Very clear. Social status, all these things, but it's whosoever will. If you're thirsty, come. If you have a need, if you're on the wrong side of the division, come. And we have a scene in Revelation that shows that Jesus is successful. Revelation 5, and they sung a new song saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. Whosoever will had come from all over. I don't understand the setting and all the implications of that scene in Revelation 5, but it's very clear that the redeemed are from everywhere. No one that's on the wrong side of the dividing, especially the final dividing, is there because they couldn't choose the right side. And every one of us is where we are this morning by direct choice, my own choice. And my challenge to us is, let's put the kingdom of our choice on full display. Let's not get sidetracked and distracted by the kingdom of this world. And let's rally the cause of the kingdom of Christ. And let's gather others in and let's swell the ranks and keep a clear vision that it's them and us. Let's kneel to pray.